And now they say we can't make it 4 o'clock.
I will open the Senate Committee on Rules for June 2nd, 2009. Apologize for the late start of this committee to members in the audience that are waiting to either hear some of the public hearings or to testify. We will be jumping around quite a bit, but that's pretty normal for this committee. I'm going to first of all open a hearing on HGR 7A, and can Tom Mann from the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs come forward? And as soon as Representative Maurer returns, I will have him join you.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HJR 7A proposes amendment to the Oregon Constitution relating to eligibility to receive loan from Oregon War Veterans Fund, removes the term war as it pertains to the Oregon War Veterans Fund, removes ineligibility for qualified veterans out of service more than 30 years, and removes the state residency requirement for the veteran in the case of a not remarried spouse, therefore increasing the number of spouses eligible. You will find a fiscal statement in your packet. It comes to you from the floor vote on a 60-0 vote.
Either of you, please start.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Evans. I'm policy advisor to Governor Kulongoski for Military and Veterans Affairs. I also had the opportunity to serve as the chair of the Governor's Veteran Services Task Force. House Joint Resolution 7 is a follow-up on the recommendations that the task force made that will extend the benefit of homeownership to folks that have served longer than 30 years. What this basically does is it is targeted specifically at the Vietnam-era veterans and the Korean War veterans and the Cold War veterans that have already gone past the 30-year cap that's currently put in the Constitution. And we believe it will make a tremendous difference to folks that have saved the money, now have the opportunity, and want to take advantage of that benefit. So I'm going to stop here. Is the representative here?
No, he's not.
No, okay. I saw you looking in the back, so I was like, right. To explain the specifics of the bill, I'm going to hand it over to Tom Mann, then I'll be here to try to provide any cleanup.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Mann. I'm the Public Information Manager of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I apologize, my director or my deputy are not here. They are both with the advisory committee today in Astoria. This bill, as Paul said, does two basic things. It eliminates the 30-year constitutional cap on the use of the home loan, the OrVet home loan. Currently, what that means in tangible terms is if you're a Vietnam veteran, you have aged out. You're no longer eligible for the Oregon Veterans Home Loan, according to the Constitution. The bill does a second thing. In the Constitution, you have to have served 210 consecutive days to be considered eligible for the home loan. However, in statute, ORS 408-225, you are a veteran at 178 consecutive days. So there's a disconnect between how you're a veteran. So we've worked very hard this session to make a veteran a veteran a veteran. And we've passed some legislation, Senate Bill 96, for example, to make sure that the definition of veteran is the same. So what we've done with House Resolution 7 is done the same. There is a companion bill, House Bill 3410, which you've already passed through the House and Senate, that makes consistent the term veteran. So how this affects some of our military is you may have a National Guardsman who served less than 210 days but more than 178. That person would not be eligible under the current constitutional limits but would be eligible under HGR 7 as amended. We feel this is a great bill. It makes the home loan a lifetime benefit. There is a companion piece, however, I must tell you about. At the federal level, in the IRS tax code, the bonds we use to fund the home loan, they're called qualified veteran mortgage bonds, it has a 25-year limit. Veterans have to have served within 25 years to use the money for a home loan under the QVMBs. Congressman Blumenauer has dropped legislation in Congress, it is H.R. 2319, I believe, to eliminate the restriction on the QVMBs as well. So this is going dual track. We're going to work on getting rid of the constitutional restrictions here in Oregon and work on getting rid of the federal restrictions in the IRS tax code to make the home loan a lifetime benefit similar to the federal VA home loan.
Cruz is here for...
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, House District 3, thank you. The two wingmen here... have brought this process along very efficiently. As a retired reserve officer, I know that there are a number of years where we were not fighting battles, and that Reserve and National Guard, in some cases, in a lot of cases, never deployed. And this would help remedy that and we hope that we value that service as well as the men and women that are serving in far-reaching places today. We urge your support.
Okay. Any questions for any of the members of the panel? Seeing none, thank you all for coming here today. No one else signed up to testify. I'm going to close that public hearing. It's the intent of the chair to bring this back in the near future for a work session, but not today. I'm going to open a public hearing on SCR 17. Could the committee administrator give a brief overview, and could Senator Whitsitt please come forward?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. SCR 17 congratulates Coach Daniel J. Miles and the Oregon Institute of Technology on success of men's basketball program over many seasons. We do have a no revenue and no impact on the original measure.
Senator Whitsitt, good afternoon.
Good please afternoon, proceed. Chair Devlin. Thank you for hearing this bill. Thank you, committee members. I'm Senator Doug Whitsitt. I represent District 28. Danny Miles is an icon in OIT. As you may know, he's won more basketball games than all but about six active coaches. I was just talking to President Chris Maples in my office a few minutes ago. Actually, he is semi-retired now and really isn't charging OIT hardly anything for his coaching. He's a gentleman that could very well hang out his shingle and get six figures and well into six figures anywhere. He's won 7 out of 10 games that his teams have played. His teams he always plays the best. Everybody wants to schedule the Hustle and Owls and try to beat him. Few are capable of doing that. He has had two national championships. The only reason that he's still at OIT is because he is that's his hometown. That is his school, and he's going to be the coach there as long as he wishes to be. So this bill started as HCR 5 on the House side. Representative Girard and I dropped the ball as far as getting it moved into a committee. I thought he was going to do it. He thought I was going to do it. You know, the old story. I very much appreciate you hearing the bill. This is a priority bill for me, and once we get this, if we can get the committee to agree to pass this through, we get it through the House floor, it will go back to the get across the Senate floor, it will go back to the House floor for either concurrence or repassage.
Okay. Any questions for Senator Whitsitt? Seeing none, thank you very much
thank
for
so
coming
much.
Here today. Close public hearing, open a work session. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move SCR 17 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, SCR 17 has been moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Mm-hmm. Senator Metzger.
Well, just briefly, actually, I have the pleasure of, as a player, coaching, playing against Mr. Miles, and we actually won at Lewis and Clark. I remember, though, going to OIT and getting the living whatever beat out of us. So I never was happier, never to have to go to OIT and see Coach Miles' teams again. Excellent coach, excellent program, and as we've had with a lot of great coaches in the Northwest, and certainly a great honor that he richly deserves.
Okay. Senator Farioli, did you have something?
Mr. Chairman, it was just a point of interest. The due pass recommendation as opposed to be adopted. Mm-hmm. I think SCR 17, the motion is properly be adopted, but
okay.
We won't quibble, Mr. Okay. Chairman.
Okay, we try not to quibble in this committee. So we have a motion that SCR 17 be sent to the Senate floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any objections? Seeing none, motion passes. Senator Whitsitt will carry. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a couple of members actually waiting to testify, so I'm going to try to go through this as expeditiously as I can. I'm going to open a hearing on HGR 54. Representative Maurer, will you come forward? Will the committee administrator give a brief overview of the HGR?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HJR 54 encourages the state of Oregon to support establishment of a statewide network of hospitals capable of performing percutaneous coronary intervention to provide rapid and effective treatment of heart attacks. Comes to you today from the House floor on a 60-0 vote with a no revenue, no fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ron Miller, House District 3, and I believe Senator Burdick has taken up HJR 54 and would be a champion for this. But this is a concern to us all. It's important when you have a heart attack that you seek treatment or receive treatment in short order. And minutes count, and minutes cause mortality and lifetime damage. This bill does not require the state to do anything, but it does give importance, legislative importance, to the idea of reducing the time from when a person has a heart attack to the time they receive treatment in a PCI hospital in the state of Oregon. This last week, I participated or attended a part of a STEMI summit, which is the ST segment of elevation myocardial infarction, to talk about how the state can do this. Oregon does not rate very well when it comes to emergency medicine. In fact, we receive an overall D on a national scale, and there are two things Oregon can do. One is have a statewide STEMI plan, and the second is to reduce the time from heart attack to balloon time to less than 90 minutes. And it can be done. In Southern Oregon, we have one of the lowest, Josephine and Jackson County have one of the lowest mortality rates for STEMI heart attacks, which is now hovering around 3%, which is absolutely fantastic. National average currently is about 8%. So I would urge your support, and I'm done.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Maurer?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. And I just wanted to thank you for bringing this to us. I had a visit recently from the head of cardiology at Oregon Health Sciences University and a person from the legacy cardiology department. There's a lot of energy that's going into this, and I think it'll make a real difference in public health in Oregon.
It does. It's about teamwork and cooperation. It requires your EMR or EMS folks. It requires your emergency room folks and your cardiology and cath lab teams to work well. And it's a good thing, and we just need to say, go get them, guys and gals.
Thank you.
Any additional? Seeing none. Thank you very much. You might stay seated for a second, actually.
Yes, sir.
I will close the public hearing. I will open a work session on HDR 54. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, move HDR 54 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Okay, HDR 54 has been moved to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, motion passes. Senator Burdick will carry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to open, just for your testimony, actually, and then I'll have to come back to it later, a hearing on HB 2345.
Representative Ron Maurer, House District 3, House Bill 2345.
Representative, you would just wait a moment. The committee administrator can give a brief overview.
Dang it.
You're on a roll, though.
You remember to give your name.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HB 2345B directs Department of Human Services to establish or contract to establish impaired health professional program, specifies components of the program, directs DHS to contract with the independent third party to establish a monitoring entity for impaired professionals, specifies duties of the monitoring entity, authorizes Health Professional Licensing Board to participate in the impaired health professionals program, specifies procedures by which the board may refer licensee to the program, prohibits board from establishing alternate impaired health professionals program, requires DHS to report on program to governor, legislative assembly, and health professional licensing boards on or before January 31, 2011, deletes existing impaired professional program of health professional licensing boards, applies to licensees identified by health professional licensing boards and disciplinary procedures commenced on or after July 1, 2010, declares emergencies effective upon passage. You'll find a -B8 amendment in your packet, which is modifies the licensee reporting requirement from 1 to 3 business days to report arrest or conviction of a misdemeanor or felony crime to the board, and specifies that if a licensee self-refers to the program, the licensee, to the best of the licensee's knowledge, they are not under investigation.
Okay, and Representative Maurer, please proceed, but could you also speak a little bit, because you know that there are amendments pending, if you could speak to those.
Yes, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ron Maurer, House District 3. House Bill 2345 is not without controversy. It is a substantial change in how we deal with impaired providers in the state of Oregon. It takes these existing impaired provider programs, which exist in a few of our boards, and pulls them out and puts them, consolidates them, and puts them essentially in the Department of Human Services. This is a result of some issues that we've had with the nursing board, and there was a lot of upheaval, and I don't think we need to go into that today. But Representative Greenlake and I don't always agree on a lot of things, but this is one thing that we did agree on. That, in fact, that we need to make a change, and we need to make a pretty bold change. There are several amendments that you will see, and I am supportive of the amendments, but I also do not want this bill to die because we ran out of time. The bill is acceptable to me as it stands, but I clearly support all of the amendments that you will see. And I would, but it's up to the chairs to how you deal with amendments. At some point, we say we're past a good idea cutoff point, and you need to stop. And I think we may be approaching that time, but hopefully we'll have all of the amendments available here today before the close of this committee.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Maurer?
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would inquire as to why the bill, why the drafters thought it necessary to prevent the board from adopting alternative plans to this impairment plan.
Currently, the board are the authority to have impaired provider programs. There are states, let me give you an example. California had an impaired provider program within its state. It got to the point it was so dysfunctional that the legislative assembly, in fact, just said no more impaired provider program in the state of California. We believe that impaired providers have value in the system. There's been a lot of money and time and effort put into training these professionals, and in fact, we can help most of these people. But there's a conflict when the impaired provider program is within the board itself. The board has one mission, and that is, in my view, is to protect the public safety and welfare. And there appears to have been, in some cases, a conflict with that role of protecting the provider over protecting the public interest. And that is why we're pulling it out. I will be the first to sit in front of this body and say this was a bad idea and we need to go back. But at this point, I think that we need to make this change, even though it's bold, somewhat outside the box, to give confidence to the public at large that, in fact, the state of Oregon is doing something, and not throwing out the providers, throwing them under the bus with no program at all.
Any additional questions for Representative Mallow? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming here today. I will close the public hearing on 2345, and I will be reopening it in a little bit. I'm going to open a public hearing on 3013A, call up Senator Johnson and Senator Cruz, and I will call up Ed Bowles, and then I'll call the next panel after that. Mr. Bowles, if you are there, please join us. And please start at your leisure, identify yourself for the record, and please limit your testimony to about 3 minutes each.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent District 16, but I am here today in my capacity as the chair of the Coastal Caucus. The Coastal Caucus represents one-tenth of the legislature. We are nine Republicans. Ooh, we are nine. We are nine legislators, Republican and Democrat. Thank you. I vote no, Mr. Chair.
I also
well,
vote no, Mr. Chair.
Well, off to an inauspicious start. We represent the communities of the Oregon coast as well as the inland Klamath Basin. And this work product that you see before you is one that the Coastal Caucus unanimously endorsed. This has been a contentious issue. When it first appeared as a possibility that we would be contemplating marine reserves for the Oregon coast, there was, I think, understandable apprehension and angst among many coastal communities. Through the very hard work of the members of the Coastal Caucus, Ed Bowles and his colleagues at ODF&W, and particularly a young graduate student who is housed in my office by dint of my service as the chairman of the Coastal Caucus, Anna Packingham, we have worked very carefully with affected stakeholders, affected communities, and bring to you a highly negotiated compromise bill that is reflective of the creation of two marine reserves on the Oregon coast with the possibility of study of three others and then the study of a fourth in Coos Bay that is prescribed in the language of the bill. This is one of these opportunities, I think, that you as colleagues will appreciate. When the legislature is asked to make yes and no decisions with winners and losers, that always puts individual legislators in an uncomfortable position. This is one of these times when the proponents and the opponents went out in the hallway, came to a hard-fought agreement over robust negotiations, and bring to you a compromise package that I think will allow us to move ahead with the imposition of a couple of marine reserves, to check their efficacy, to see if the promise that the advocates believe they will deliver can be realized without damage to coastal communities or coastal economies. And so I commend the bill for your consideration, and I was delighted to be joined by Senator Cruz today, who I hope will attest to the bipartisan nature of the compromise that has brought us here.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Senator Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1. I represent the other end of the coast, and Senator Verger represents that piece in between the two of us. This has been an interesting journey, and it's been a journey we've been on for several years now. And at one point in time, I doubt if very many of us were going to be looking favorably upon the place we have arrived at, but the fact is we are now. And let me tell you one of the reasons, or a couple of the reasons, that we're supportive of this. Number one, the two marine reserves that are identified in the bill were arrived at because the communities came forward and recommended these, and the communities are fully supportive of doing this work. The other significant reason, from my perspective, is the fact that we continue to talk about protecting the ocean, and at this point we don't have a good enough scientific basis to know what it is we're protecting. There are a couple efforts going to be moving forward this session. One is the seafloor mapping, which does kind of tie in this to a degree, but it's also very important in this bill. We have specific money, hopefully, that will come to it that will allow us to do some actual on the ground or under the water research as to what is going on in these two marine reserves, so that if we move forward in the future, we can do it from a scientific base, not a political base. And that has been the thing that has driven us from day one, is this should not be a political agenda. This should be an agenda based on good science. And we fully expect that with the implementation of this, with the passage of this bill, that 2 years from now, when we come back here, we will have a good scientific basis to make any other considerations into the future. You know, sometimes we get wrapped up in things that clearly can be contentious, and this was very contentious for us for a long time. The Coastal Caucus has been working on this bill since January, basically, on a weekly basis almost. And we have had all the stakeholders at the table. We have got buy-off from everybody at this point. This does not change the world, but it gives us, we gotta have a place to start, and this gives us a place to start. It does send a signal that we, as a legislative assembly, are concerned about the health of our ocean, and we're willing to step forward and do some research to find out what it is we're talking about. I fully support this. We will be watching very closely as to what happens. I think ODF&W fully understands what is expected of them. And I think the other state natural resource agencies that have pieces in their budget dealing with marine reserves are going to fully understand what we expect of them as well. There should be no surprises come out of this. What we should get is a good, sound scientific basis. And if that is what we achieve, then we have achieved something very good here.
Yeah. Representative Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and I'm here to add a little muscle to these two fine colleagues of mine. I agree with everything they say, and Senator Cruz mentioned the seafloor mapping tie-in to help us get going on that. I just got some good news 20 minutes ago from Dr. Goldfinger at Oregon State University Mapping Lab. They have, when the budget went through for DSL, they're already starting to talk to the contractor, and they think they can start working in July. And that is really good news, because once they start the mapping project, we can fit that in. That's the first step before the data collection for some of these reserves. So very good news to hear.
Okay, any questions for any of the panel? Seeing none, thank you all for coming
here
today.
Thank you.
Next up will be Susan Drew Allen, Drew Hagedorn, and Mr. Bowles, if you'll come back. And then we'll have one more person to testify after this group. And if you could each limit your testimony to no more than 3 minutes each.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Ed Bowles. I'm the Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and also the current governor's designee representing his office on OPAC. And the legislators you heard from did an incredibly thorough job encapsulating this bill and the process that it went through to get to where it is. So I have provided a written testimony and kind of a map outlining what was proposed through the summer, as well as what OPAC sorted through that and actually came through with their recommendations. My comments will just be very brief given that. I think what I'd like to mention is that the Ocean Policy Advisory Council did a lot of heavy lifting coming to a balance on this, with a lot of various interests being represented in that process, numerous meetings, very well attended, up and down the coast, and with folks from other parts of the state involved as well. So it was a very thorough and remarkable process. I'd also like to mention that Representative Boone talked about getting some of the research started. There is an emphasis within this budget to do what we call cooperative research, which is actually where we use the fleet wherever possible to actually conduct the research and charter those vessels, including some of the mapping, diving, and other aspects of this with scientific oversight, and we're very excited to move forward on that. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has a strong role in implementing this. First step is to implement a work plan or develop a work plan that we'll be doing collaboratively with all the affected parties in the coastal communities for the details. And we're very excited to get started on getting some new information on our near shore and very supportive of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Ms. Allen.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today to House Bill 3013. For the record, my name is Susan Allen, and I am the director of the coalition Our Ocean. Our Ocean, representing its members and groups of over 60,000 members statewide, supports House Bill 3013A, as we believe it reflects the spirit of Governor Kulongoski's Ocean Policy Advisory Council's recommendation. During the state process, OPAC reviewed 20 site nominations for marine reserves and protected areas. The 20 proposals co-nominated 9 ecologically important areas. OPAC then deliberated on those 9 areas and recommended 6 of these areas for further evaluation, indicating that 2 sites were ready for initial implementation. Our Ocean believes that supporting the 6 sites that were recommended by OPAC is an important step to ensuring the best long-term benefit to the state. The amendments provide the necessary articulation of a clear, balanced, and diverse process to advance this effort. In order to ensure all discussions move forward productively, the -3 amendments that are incorporated in the A version of the bill include a clear timeline. Our Ocean and its member groups are hopeful that the amendments will allow all parties to foster stronger relationships and partnerships in a robust stewardship discussion. We believe that this discussion with scientists at the table will help ensure that Oregon's ocean health and productivity are sustainable. This process and policy represents a prudent investment in the advancement of an important state process that spans over 2 gubernatorial administrations and 8 years. A significant state resource and agency time have already been invested, and House Bill 3013A will help ensure this process continues to advance with science, conservation, and industry at the table. When used as a productive management strategy, a network of marine reserves and protected areas is like an insurance policy for our coastal waters. It is an investment in the future health and productivity of our ocean. And importantly, this maintains a strong coastal economy while preserving and protecting Oregon ocean ecosystems. As these areas are further considered, it is important to remember that the OPAC policy guidance document and the sizing and spacing workshop results, which emphasize the fact that each habitat type hosts an array of wildlife. The best way to ensure the maximum benefit to the state is to ensure that all major habitat types are represented within the OPAC sites. I think that we all know that a plan for creating marine reserves and protected areas is most effective when it considers the needs of the whole state. The conservation community, ocean users, the businesses and organizations that depend on a healthy ocean, as well as the plants and animals that live in and around our waters. That is why we are especially heartened that that House Bill 3013A describes the formation of diverse and balanced community groups that will be able to discuss marine conservation and make recommendations by November 2010. We all have a stake in our ocean and what happens to it, and we all share a responsibility for taking care of it. In the amended House Bill 3013A, it allows all parties the chance for a productive, science-based discussion that evaluates the merits of each site. It also ensures the continuity necessary to move this process forward so that Oregon can establish a better level of resilience in our nearshore waters. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today to this historic bill, and I want to thank you for your time.
Mr. Hagedorn, could you please speak to the bill and limit your testimony to 3 minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Drew Hagedorn for Seafood Oregon. Seafood Oregon is a consortium of commodity commissions funded by Oregon's commercial fishing families. We participated in the collaborative effort that produced House Bill 3013A and are pleased to support the bill today. I'll defer to our written testimony in the interest of time and let it suffice to say that the bill strikes an appropriate balance between all the stakeholders and provides for meaningful community participation as the marine reserve discussion evolves. I'd also like to commend the Coastal Caucus in particular, ODF&W, and all the stakeholders for their time and effort in reaching this consensus. We'd urge you to support the bill, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions for this panel? Seeing no questions, thank you. Mr. Harder, will you please come forward? Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder. I'm a member of a number of sport fishing groups, and I'm here today representing my grandchildren. Senator Byrd explaining at me, I know why. I was involved with this not from the very beginning, but from a sport fisher's point of view, there was a great deal of angst up and down the coast when we looked at all the marine reserves that were proposed and primarily set off over half the good reefs on the Oregon coast. The fact that we're here today is amazing to me. I have done this for a lot of years, and I have never seen two groups further apart have the ability to come together and present you with the bill that's before you today. Two of the things I want to address very quickly. One is research, and there was really no way of getting this research prior to this bill. If we don't know where we start, we'll never know if we are successful or if we fail. So we are supporters of that. And we're also very concerned about what's happened in California, where this bill was put into, or a similar bill was put into law backwards. They said that if the money for research and law enforcement went away, then all fishing would be prohibited. This bill does not make it extremely clear, but it does make it clear that if we don't get the money, there is no research, there is no law enforcement, and the prohibitions on fishing go away. We're very concerned that that is enforced, and we will be watching it very closely. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Harder? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming here today. Do I need Senator Byrd here?
You do.
Okay. I will close the public hearing, and we will be at ease for a moment. I do not know. Just so that Representative Boone knows, we are going to probably try to move 3487 later today. We're waiting on a fiscal, but we'll either move it later today or we'll move it tomorrow. So,
We will come back to the work session on this in just a moment. I'm going to open a public hearing on HCR 13A. Can the committee administrator give a brief overview? And can Mr. Williams from OSBA come forward?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. HCR 13A proposes revisions to the Oregon Constitution to exempt local taxing districts from certain limitations on bonded indebtedness if bonded indebtedness is incurred to finance capital costs. Allow a state to loan credit and incur a specified amount of indebtedness to provide funds to school district to finance capital costs. Sunset provision transferring monies on January 2011 refers revision to voters on May 2010 for the next primary election.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just want to thank you very much for hearing HCR 13A today. This, I was getting a few questions in the back of the room about why education was in here today, so quite a diverse agenda you've got. Frankly, we heard you were talking about schools of fish, so we thought maybe we could count them as ADMW for education for our coastal friends. Interestingly enough, followed the very same bill down in House Rules a couple weeks ago. HR 13A is an integral part of an ever-developing package of bills that are addressing K-12 capital infrastructure in the state, which is really at a crisis point, having faced many years of delayed maintenance or delayed needs to the physical infrastructure for schools. It is often bandied about that the average age of a school building in the state of Oregon is 50 years plus, really looking at some pretty interesting conditions in our school system. This package really began last legislative session when you all passed out two very good bills, one that restored the simple majority voting rule for local bond and levy elections, and the other establishing a construction excise tax for schools to use for K-12 capital construction. This legislative session, you have before you HGR 13A. You also have in the legislature a bill that would create a task force to do a comprehensive analysis and review of all of the standing infrastructure of the state. And you also have a bill making several minor modifications to the construction excise tax to make it a little more effective for local school districts, which actually should be up for a vote on your Senate floor tomorrow. I would urge your all support on that. HR 13A would propose to make two major changes to the Oregon Constitution that will provide additional flexibility not only for local districts but for the state. The first amendment that it would do is it would change the definition for capital construction for a local jurisdiction's bond election. Local school districts, cities, and counties, all when they are seeking to do a capital bond, are required to put that to a vote of their public, and what they can spend those things on is quite limited by a definition that was put in the Constitution by Measures 47 and 50. For instance, you could build a brand new school, a brand new gymnasium, but you could not put portable bleachers in that gymnasium with the dollars from a local bond election. You also could not repave a parking lot for the school district with your local bond issuances. There are many items, as we say, that you could not make a school with your local bond issuances, and this would really just bring that definition in line to allow a district to bond for more items to really furnish a school and set it up so when they open those doors, kids can walk in ready to learn. The second part of this bill would add a new section of the Constitution aligning K-12 with the rest of the education sector, community colleges, and higher ed, to allow your successors down the road to have the choice of whether or not you as a state want to incur debt to be able to pay for K-12 capital construction. You, of course, right now are barred from doing that. You cannot float a bond to help school districts pay for their capital facilities needs. So right now, where you pick up 75% of the operating dollars for K-12 schools, you pick up less than 0.1% of the K-12 facility costs in the state, and we really just want to give you that alternative down the road to be able to pick up those costs. Really, HR 13A is a nice cleanup to the Oregon Constitution to help schools to have a little more flexibility down the road. Urge the committee's support of the bill and forwarding it on to the full Senate. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Yes, Senator Metzger.
Yes, I do have one, David. I know that the state is still paying for computers from 97 that are obsolete and probably don't exist anymore. And one concern I would have with this is it seems like you're opening it up to those types of short life issues because you're wrapping them in the overall cost. So you build a new school, yeah, that's $50 million, but we have basically items there that may last only two years or so, but they'll be paid for because the average life is a 20-year bond or a 25-year bond. And I'd like you to address that because one of the concerns would be that you would be paying long-term debt, and I know we've talked on the floor, some people have about that, for things that have short-term life because they're wrapped in one or more high-end improvements that do have long life.
Excellent question. Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, the language in the bill for the modifying the definition of capital construction does have language that says that you could bond for anything that has a usable life of more than 1 year. However, the catch is that you cannot outbond the usable life of the item. So right now, school districts, when they, for instance, Salem Kaiser recently passed a bond of $242 million. They have only so far issued about $100 million of that bond. And that $100 million is generally structured such that the portion, so for instance, under this scenario, let's say, using your example, if I were to bond for technology hardware, a series of computers, I would estimate that the usable life of those computers is 3, 4, whatever, you know, I'm sure there's sort of an actuarial equivalent, then that amount of the bond would be required to be paid back in less than the usable life of that product. So your bond is structured such that you're paying the debt back that's applied to each item in an amount of time less than the usable life of the item. You're not bonding 30 years for computers or books. You're bonding for that less amount of time. So it's all in the way you structure the bond when you go out to the market such that you're not bonding for extended. And that's in this definition as well, is that you cannot outbond the usable life of the product.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation.
Okay. Any additional questions? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. Do I need my Senator Perioli? Do I need my other party for this one?
For HR 13?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I thought we agreed that HR 13 wasn't going to move today.
Okay, we're going to hold it up for today. Okay. Okay.
Be at ease for a moment.
I will open a work session on House Bill 3013A. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3013A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. House Bill 3013A has been moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Ferrioli.
Mr. Chairman, I was having some discussion with a representative of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife earlier today, and it was a bit reminiscent for me. It was just kind of a case of deja vu. And I asked the individual if they'd ever heard of the spotted owl habitat area where we proceeded on the basis of Endangered Species Act concerns over the spotted owl to draw circles on maps across Oregon forests. And we proceeded with that effort, which was supposed to be science-based and result in a sustainable management plan for not only spotted owls but for forests. Eventually, the network of spotted owl habitats became so extensive that it precluded sustainable management on federal land, and we still have not achieved any sort of resolution to that problem on the west side forests. A sustainable harvest level is still a matter of extremely contentious opinion and hot scientific debate. On the east side forests, we've had a similar decline in sustainable management, although not specific to the spotted owl, it is specific to salmonid species. Displaced timber workers were terrified by the prospects of job loss, and communities are and have been devastated. They were promised alternative jobs in sustainable management of the resources. Loggers were to be hired for conversion of biomass to energy, salmonid restoration projects, the whole idea of this spotted owl habitat conservation network was to be offset by jobs in the woods and future productivity. The proposal that we have before us starts with 20 sites that have been nominated, 9 ecologically significant areas, 6 nominated for further study, 2 created by this action that the legislature now contemplates. And when I've asked the question about eventually how many of these sites will there be, there really is no way to answer that question. But I would anticipate that 2 becomes 4, and 4 becomes 6, and 6 becomes 9, and 9 becomes 20 over a period of time. Notwithstanding everybody's good intentions to the contrary, and notwithstanding everybody's currently asserted positions, part of what drives this issue is the fear of citizens of a potential application of marine reserves through initiative. That's a very sad circumstance. So somebody said it was amazing that this compromise had been reached. It's not at all amazing when you consider that fear is a significant driver in this issue. So, Mr. Chairman, in casting my vote, I realize I may be the only no vote in the legislature on this issue. That doesn't bother me at all. I see that there were no votes that I could find in the House consideration of this issue. Only excuse the legislators. I will be casting a no vote here, and I will be casting a no vote on the floor.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Okay, on the motion to move House Bill 3013A to the floor with a due pass recommendation, would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson.
Excuse.
Senator Burdick.
Aye.
Senator Metzger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Ferriello.
No.
Chair Devlin.
Aye. Motion passes. Senator Johnson, and if he chooses to, Senator Cruz will co-carry. Now, can we hold on just one moment? So I'm going to need to move the dash twos also. Okay. I open a work session. I haven't opened the work session yet. On House Bill 3487A, do I have a motion on the dash A2 amendments?
Mr. Chairman, in the spirit of cooperation, I move to suspend. Do you need the rule suspension first?
Second.
Second. Okay. I move to adopt the dash A2 amendments to House Bill 3450.
Or 3487?
3487. I know. My glasses.
We're all getting older. Okay, it's been moved to adopt the dash two amendments to 3487A. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, motion passes. Now I believe the suspension.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the fiscal statement, which is not accompanying this bill, to be minimal based on information from the committee administrator. And since I believe that that is the case, I move that rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3487A without the fiscal impact statement being available for review.
It's been moved that we vote on 3487 without the fiscal impact statement being available. We have heard from LFO that the fiscal impact of the conforming amendments is minimal. Is there any objection to suspension of the rules? Hearing no objection, motion passes. Is there a main motion on the bill as amended?
Mr. Chairman, I move HB 3487A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. House Bill 3487A as amended has been moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay. And for 3487,
they can't write that word minimal and give it to
us. I will pick someone to carry.
M-I-N-I-M-A-L.
Okay. Now, I will reopen the hearing on House Bill 2345B. We heard earlier testimony from Representative Maurer. We also heard the committee administrator's explanation. I'm going to go to Representative Greenlick and Jane Ellen Wyden first. And we understand that there are amendments pending on this, so I do not know if we're probably not going to move to work session today unless things are so expeditious that they're amazing. Senator Greenlick, or Representative Greenlick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about House Bill 2345, which has been in the works for just about 2 years at this moment. The health licensing boards have a dual responsibility, and on the one hand, their job is to protect the public from the improper practice of the health profession, and on the other hand, their job is to enhance the ability of the health professionals to serve the public by doing safe and competent practice. The issues of how to deal with impaired professionals, how to maintain their ability to serve the public at the same time the public is being protected, has turned out to be a very complex issue. And over the last decade or so, programs have emerged sort of willy-nilly, first in the medical board, and later in the nursing board, the dental board, the pharmacy board, and I think at perhaps one or two other boards, where there was the ability to find an impaired professional, to restrict the license, the practice of an impaired professional, and put them into a systematic treatment and monitoring program that would allow them to rehabilitate themselves and then to come back to practice their profession in a safe way. We found during the last session that there were some significant problems with these systems. You'll hear from the executive director of the nursing board, who was not the executive director of the nursing board when there were significant problems in that board, people who were supposed to be monitored and under treatment ended up not being monitored, ended up being found in monitoring to be violating the law, and ended up not being reported to the law. The discussions in the boards, in all of the boards, triggered the House Health Committee to take an interim charge on dealing with this. We worked it over the interim. We proposed a bill. There were some problems with that bill. One profession or the other, one board or the other, had a problem with it. And the issue had to do with separating the treatment program from the monitoring program. Under federal law, when a program is providing substance abuse treatment, they are restricted from reporting any information they find in that treatment to legal authorities by federal law. So what we were groping with was a way to have a treatment program and a monitoring program that were separate, and to try and find some standardization of the way to do that across the board. 2345 is that attempt. Once we got into session, Representative Maurer led a work group working with folks from the governor's office, from the boards, from the professions, and eventually came up with what I think is a pretty good bill and a compromise bill, and that's House Bill 2345, which creates a sort of standard way to develop a at least referral and treatment program and a separate monitoring program that could work across all the health professional boards. You do have some amendments. My recommendation is you pass the bill without amendments. On the other hand, I think the amendments are not seriously objectionable, and if it makes sense to hold up the process and to pass the amendments, I would say go ahead and do that if that's the way that it, after you hear testimony, it seems like the right thing to do. But the important thing is to take a step forward in getting what is a mess and a potential mess straightened up, and this bill sets us on the road to do that.
Any questions for Representative Greenlick?
Thank you very much for hearing the bill, sir.
Please proceed.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, Jane Ellen Wydance with the Addictions and Mental Health Division, Department of Human Services. We are the entity that would take on the Impaired Health Professionals Program and standardize that across all the licensing boards in the state and become the treatment entity that Representative Greenlick spoke about. We requested the Dash 8 amendments that are before you today to address some of the concerns that our Assistant Attorney General noticed in the bill, specifically regarding Oregon State statutes, confidentiality, and release of protected health information, and also to ensure that the information that's going between DHS and this new monitoring entity, is all of that information continues to be protected health information and is not subject to public records request. We think to protect people's confidentiality in a new program and moving forward, we really would respectfully request the Dash 8 amendments to meet the requirements that our AG noticed for us. The other issue that I'd like to bring forward to you today is that though the bill will be, or the new program will be self-funded through memorandums of understanding and interagency agreements between the licensing boards and DHS, we believe that, we need fiscal impact, or excuse me, position authority to implement this program, so though that the fiscal that you have before you says there is no fiscal impact, we believe it needs to be referred to Ways and Means so that we can get the position authority to implement this new program for DHS. And thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions that I could.
Okay. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. I'm going to call up the final three people that have said they wish to testify. Holly Mercer, Bruce Bishop, and Brian Behringer. Yeah. Since you've changed other hats, Mr. Behringer, I have problems pronouncing your name. Hopefully you'll keep your current hat for at least a couple more sessions. Please proceed.
Chair Devlin and members of the committee, my name is Holly Mercer. I'm the executive director of the Board of Nursing. I've only been in my position about a year and a half. We regulate 70,000 licensees, including 50,000 nurses and 20,000 certified nurse assistants. Our program, our current nurse monitoring program, is the largest impaired professional program among the healthcare licensing boards. We have 280 participants in that program. After I became executive director in January of 2008, we did a thorough audit of those files and found approximately 75% of those files were out of compliance. We took immediate steps to strengthen our program. A lot of what you see in House Bill 2345 reflects some of those steps, some of those clear guidelines that we felt our licensees needed. Many of our licensees thanked us for having that clarity in the program. The ones that didn't thank us and felt that this was not the right program for them were eventually revoked by the board. They can come back to the board in 3 years and try to resubmit their application for licensure. Coming into the Board of Nursing as somewhat of an outsider, it was absolutely frightening to me to see the amount of risk that is there for the public when we have impaired professionals in the healthcare arena. And among our 2,200 complaints that we receive every year. Close to 40% of those have substance abuse issues. We feel these programs are very important to rehabilitate and keep those professionals within healthcare. We want them to succeed in these programs, but we cannot do so at the expense of the public safety. We feel House Bill 2345 protects the public. It provides a consistent, strong program. It puts doctors and dentists and pharmacists and nurses and other healthcare professions in the same program with the same standards and the same reporting. So we would urge your support of House Bill 2345 and support the efforts of Representative Greenleck and Representative Maurer. Thank you.
Okay, please proceed.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Behringer with the Oregon Medical Association, and I would like to bring before you the B-11 amendments. We agree that the goal of 2345 is to maintain the safety of the public, and we need to make sure that our members get help and rehabilitated when they need it and not try to hide the problem. On the House side, we had voiced some concerns about the current bill and how the current program participants are transitioned from the old programs to the new programs, and that's what the B-11 aims to work on. I apologize that they're here at the last minute. We had B-9s earlier today, but we wanted to harmonize our issues with some issues from the governor's office, and that's what's contained in the B-11s. Real quickly, the B-11 amendments in Section 1 would require that continue to require current language, which would in the bill, which requires DHS and the participating licensing boards to collaborate on the transfer of participants. In Section 2, it would require the program to honor the terms of the existing diversion agreements, provided that they are consistent with the terms of the new program. And then really, Section 3 requires the program to keep self-referred participants' information confidential unless they cease to participate in the program or engage in conduct prohibited by the new program. So we would just like to offer those amendments, and thank you, and I can answer any questions if you have any.
Yeah. Mr. Bishop.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ms. Seiler, good afternoon. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of Northwest Permanente and the Kaiser Permanente region in the Northwest. In opposition to House Bill 2345, we're not Johnny-come-latelys to this bill. We testified against the bill in the House and continue to have concerns about the way the bill accomplishes its goals. We understand the goals it seeks, but we think there are both policy and procedural problems in the bill before you today that warrant the committee's not moving the bill forward. These are important issues. In my view, those issues have not been fully discussed in the House. They will not have an opportunity this legislative session to be discussed here. I would urge the committee to go slow on making changes of this magnitude with as little consideration as the issue has been given. They are very big steps that affect not only physicians and dentists, but every other health professional in the state. With significant challenges, both of public protection, but also of treatment for health professionals. I would be glad to detail the reasons that we've communicated previously to the House, our opposition. Those reasons still continue in the be engrossed bill before you today. But I'll sum it up by urging that the committee not support House Bill 2345.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you all for coming here today. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill today? Okay. I will close the public hearing. We are awaiting fiscal and revenue impact statements on some of the amendments. We will bring the bill back as soon as other items are ready for the bill. That committee completes our work for today. We will be back here tomorrow. Okay. We only have four bills up for the agenda tomorrow. That should be issued relatively soon. I do not know if there's anything additional that could be added at this point. But we will meet again tomorrow at 3 o'clock. That we're adjourned.